Namaste. This is the third part of the tri-series on Sri Aurobindo's life, the final part. If we can ever use the word final, because Sri Aurobindo's Leela is continuing. It has only begun, in fact. So, we have seen the second part comes to a closure by 1926. So before we go to the next part, we can see some of the things that Sri Aurobindo did during his stay in Pondicherry from 1910 to 1926. Of course, his personal sadhana, he had third major experience of Parabrahman, dwelling for 18 hours a day in Parabrahman, as he writes in one of the letters to Barin. And this 1912 or 1913. And then he had the fourth major realization, and that is complete identity with Sri Krishna, the descent of the overmind plane upon earth, which meant that now the next step, the supramental evolution on earth, the way has been cleared. He had many other experiences and realizations. So these, when we say these four, we see, for example, when we go through the record, we see Sri Aurobindo is developing Trikal Drishti. And not only is he developing it, he is perfecting it. And some of this we can see in his poems, both even during Baroda, later on, you know, in Pondicherry, where he is able to see 100 years progress in front of him. And all that is happening today, and we may be taken by surprise, but Sri Aurobindo has force in all this. In 1945, for example, when one of the disciples wrote to him that this is the situation of the world, he says, yes, I know it. And then he says that just as in individual yoga, you have to dig the subconscious. And all that is hidden comes out. So also in the yoga of the world, all that is hidden, all that is suppressed, all that is comes out is released before it can be finally sorted out. So that's a long process which continues. But apart from that, that process had already begun and that is continuing. It's a long process. The baggage that we are carrying as a humanity is millenniums. So it's not something which in 30, 40 years, all that garbage, all that unresolved issues, unsolved problems can be just tackled. They have to be solved, not cutting the Gordian knot. That's not Sri Aurobindo's way, because it's a yoga of transformation. In transformation, you have to lay bare every thread. Then it's like a microsurgery, and not just a microsurgery, but a microplastic surgery. So you have to take out things which are no more needed, but they have got entangled. You have to remove it. And when you remove it, they cling. They badly cling. And then there are things which are yet belonging to old tendencies, ways of life, which can be changed. They are ready for change. So you have to take them and do the plastic surgery. They have to change. And of course, there are things which are open and ready, and that's the easy part of the work. So all that work had started while he went to Pondicherry, first on himself, and that's what we see in 1926. His personal yoga gets completed. The 10th limb, as we were talking yesterday, is in all likelihood the far off goal of physical transformation, because physical transformation cannot be an individual process. There is nothing like a freak supramental being emerging. It is a collective process, like any evolution. So there has to be a certain number of humanity ready, which will, along with Mother and Sri Aurobindo, inhabit certain planes and subtle physical. And suddenly when sufficient number is ready, it will start precipitating. Probably it will start picking up bodies which are ready and souls which are ready. And the Mother has described all this in Agenda as the switching into another body. So all that is a thing for later. But in between 1910 to 1926, the overmind creation had descended. Sri Aurobindo's personal sadhana was completed. And for the world, he gave a very interesting science of consciousness. It's there, just like he gave all about India and awakening of India, all the roadmap he gave for the future. And he also gave, you know, certain other things with philology which he had started. So there in Pondicherry, through his writing, Sri Aurobindo gave a science of consciousness. Before Pondicherry, he gives a system of national education. So in this science of consciousness, it's yet to be seen. Very few people know that it exists. For those who want to read it, it's part of Shubhendu's collected works, volume 12, Essays, Divine and Human. So it's a whole roadmap of the future, how psychology, physics, and all this biology is going to shape itself in the future. Of course, they are like small passages. You have to pick up. Any alert person, anybody who is awake, who knows about these fields, will immediately see in it enough material to start a new approach in whatever he is doing. Similarly, on the aside, he gave a new science of healing. He didn't use the word science of healing. But he gave a science of healing where the whole healing process he laid bare right from the highest spiritual standpoint to the subconscient. For instance, he says why illnesses recur. They recur because they are in the subconscious as shadows. It's like when you discard something, it doesn't go away. And he knew it all by yoga and it remains in the subconscious. From there it will erupt. So all this he had to clear, and how to clear it. It's a whole, literally it's a science of healing. Shubhendu didn't care about putting those terms and presenting a paper or publishing something, because of course these are not things which are meant for academic discussions but to be realized within oneself. He gave a new science of philology. So that's the third part. And this science of philology, which we were hinting, is done in great detail. Much of it was written in 1913. It is available now as Vedic and Philology Studies as part of collected works of Sri Aurobindo, where Sri Aurobindo showed the roots of Sanskrit tongue. All the sounds which constitute the Sanskrit tongue, and based on that he has compared, based on the root sounds, completely from A to Kshatragya, each root, what does it indicate, and from there you can derive a meaning. It's a very painstaking study, and all this he did based on a new Nirukta given by Sri Krishna. So it's a, again, because Sri Aurobindo didn't talk about it, so people miss it out. But any linguist who is interested in Sanskrit, and of course we have fortunately some people who are interested, they would find it amazing that, well, it's a wealth. And how these roots compare with Latin roots, how they compare with Tamil roots, those who want to do a comparative study, all that is there. So he gave a new science of linguistics. And based on this new science of linguistics, as we have said, he refuted the Aryan theory purely on philological grounds. And he gave a new interpretation of the Vedas. So this new interpretation is very methodically done. It's not like because I say so. He logically explains why this meaning in the mantra means this. And if you apply this sense, it applies everywhere consistently. So all that, we still talk about maximular. We don't even speak in our textbooks that Sri Aurobindo gave a new interpretation of the Vedas. We still continue with maximalarian theories. So that of course is pity that we don't seem to appreciate our own, as we say, indigenous genius. So he gave a new interpretation of the Veda. He gave a new sense to the Upanishads, especially the Ish Upanishad, which has been often discredited or meanings have been twisted. But when we read Sri Aurobindo's sense of the Isha Upanishad, we see what a profound and wonderful Upanishad it is. He gave a new sense to essays on the Gita. He revealed not only that it's not just a Karma Yoga, it is a synthesis of karma, jnana, bhakti, and there is a synthesis also of the Sankhya and the Vedvad, which was prominent at that point of time. How Sri Krishna picks up all of them and weaves them together. But it definitely is a synthesis of bhakti, jnana and karma. So it's not just a karma yoga, which is how we, even today, many of us understand it and put karma yoga separately, jnana yoga separately, bhakti yoga separately. But Sri Krishna has already synthesized it. Sri Aurobindo had to take this synthesis to another level. In his own yoga, sixth contribution, he created a synthesis of Vedanta and Tantra. So Sri Krishna doesn't take up Tantra. He passingly mentions. Sri Aurobindo synthesizes it. So all the experience and realizations of Tantra are part of his all-inclusive yoga. He also creates a synthesis of the ever-divided spiritual life and material life. So this world is not divorced from God, nor God is divorced from world. They are divorced in our mind's consciousness. Because mind by its nature is a divisive power. It cannot think of oneness, at the same time it cannot conceive of many. It either leans towards oneness, then it loses the many. So then it says all is one, many are appearances. Or it leans on many and then says there is no oneness, there is multiplicity. But the secret of oneness, one and the many, unity and diversity lies in the supermind. That's why Sri Aurobindo's ascension to supermind and the gospel of the supermind, which he gave again during this period. And then he gave in his prophetic work, The Life Divine, the future of the earth. Several places we see he spoke of the future in twofold way. One is The Life Divine, where he charted the entire evolutionary journey of man till this point, and the future evolutionary journey, and where it is going to lead us towards the Life Divine. So he laid the metaphysical foundations of this new yoga, which he was perfecting within himself. He also laid, now I have lost count of the numbers, so 8th or 9th, he gave also all about how humanity will move towards human unity through phases of anarchy. If you read the human cycle and the problem of human unity, one understands the necessity even of war. Religion of humanity, all that is going to come, the breakdown of religions, the even anarchy which is going to come as a part of the process. So if you read it, he has given the entire roadmap to the future. And of course, simultaneously, during this period, 1916, he started that work which ultimately he would say, all else is only a preparation. This work of mine is the message, and that is Savitri. So now we see that he gave all this, and then the mother had come. His personal yoga being complete, he was observing the changes that were happening even in this body. Ambulal Purani, when he came, he had met him in 1918, and again he meets him in 1921. So he says, what's happened to you? So he says, what's happened to you? He said, no, your hairs are shining, your complexion has changed, because Sri Aurobindo had pockmarks over his face and darkish complexion. And suddenly he could see a pinkish golden complexion, fair complexion. His hairs were all shining. So he asked, do you use any hair oil? He said, no. And he said, what has happened? Your whole face has changed. And Sri Aurobindo just laughed and brushed his aside and said, you also look different. You have also changed. So he was concretely observing the changes, and these changes were observed by others also. So it's a whole saga, wonderful story, which of course we need not go into details here. We are just touching upon a very, like a brief review. So what happens from 1926 onwards? His yoga is complete. So he starts giving the yoga to earth and man. So what is the difference? He's already written the synthesis of yoga. In synthesis of yoga, he writes the principles of the yoga. There are the fundamentals. This is how this yoga has to be done. But in practice, when human beings apply it, for instance, you may give a method of meditation. All of us know it. You should meditate like this, and for some days it's very nice. After that, you start having challenges. So you go to Guruji, and Guruji, if he's there, he will tell you what is to be done. Some may say, no, meditate more. So now what started after 1926 is that disciples had gathered, and the integral yoga came into practice. Next year it will be 100 years not only of Siddhi Divas, but the gift of integral yoga to mankind. Before that, it is in Sri Aurobindo, he was not giving yoga to anyone. People were gathering evening talks, they would receive something, they would understand through conversation. Some odd practice Sri Aurobindo would give. Okay, you take this mantra and concentrate like that. But no methodical way of integral yoga, because all his work was waiting for the mother's coming and taking up the charge of the yoga. So 1926 also, the mother took charge of the yoga. Sri Aurobindo stepped into the background to bring down the supermind, which was his main work. So from 1926 to 1950, one integral yoga was given to mankind. So how it was given to mankind? Disciples had gathered who automatically became disciples of Sri Aurobindo, because they started living here. The ashram, 100 years of ashram coming into existence. There is no formal date that way, but 24th November 1926 is regarded as the day the ashram was born. And the reason is that from that time onwards, formally, disciples were accepted and they started the journey, and they had their own experiences, they had their difficulties, they had their challenges, they had their problem in understanding, and so letters on yoga started. So letters on yoga, and they are, the beauty of these letters is that there you find the integral yoga in real life practice, because integral yoga is in real time. Somebody is besieged with doubts, somebody is besieged with want of faith, somebody is going into depression and is feeling despair, somebody wants to commit suicide, somebody is having a relationship problem, somebody is having job and career problem, somebody is having money problem, all kinds of things. And yoga is to move through this entire panorama of life. In this yoga, there is no simple solution like, okay, all this is, this world is impermanent, transient, you just meditate, do bhakti of God, he will liberate you. That part is only first step of the yoga, finding the divine and being liberated. Purification is only first part. But this yoga moves through real life challenges. And how to deal with every challenge, which includes money, which includes health, which includes wife, husband, children. All this panorama we find in Sri Aurobindo's letters. So, and then when the transformation process starts, it brings another kind of challenge. Because when this higher consciousness, that time it was not called a supramental consciousness, because because there are different levels which were acting, but that's not the purpose of today's talk. But just to touch upon it, the different levels of the higher consciousness were entering and touching the sadhaks, and either they would have a very beautiful experience, or sometime they would have resistance, then eventually they will undergo a change. So all that we find described in letters on yoga. So the integral yoga was given during this period and it continued. So this one part of it. Along with that, what happened during this period is that as Sri Aurobindo was drawing the super mind closer and closer, ashram had come into existence like a seed plot. Suddenly there was the outbreak of the Second World War. So just as Sri Aurobindo literally worked for the freedom of India, but in the forefront, he worked, actively put his force behind the Allies in the Second World War. That's another interesting piece of history, that Sri Aurobindo, just like Krishna had put himself with Arjun, so Sri Krishna had put himself behind the Allies. And this had created a lot of flutter and confusion. Why? Because we are too much into Panchatantra, that Shatru ka Shatru Mitra hota hai. So Shatru ka Shatru, who was the enemy of the enemy? Well, Hitler was the enemy of the enemy, which was British. So there were people who were trying to woo Hitler. And we know the names. But Sri Aurobindo saw in Hitler the great Asura, who had come to damage this earth, damage his work, and push back his work by 10,000 years. That time nobody knew. Now we have the movies like Schindler's List, and we can see he was the Asura of Asura. If you compare Ravan, Kans, and whoever you bring, Dushasan, they look like decent guys. When you compare Hitler and what he had done, and all the worst Asuras we can see in Sri Aurobindo's age, starting with Hitler, starting with those who confuse the minds of people, and though they came as ideologies, positivism, Freudian psychoanalysis, he has written something about all of this. It's very Asuric, scientific materialism at its bottom, and all these ideas which were released by the Asura, and Sri Aurobindo was countering it like arrows of light. This is what Kalki is supposed to do. With this sword of light, is slaying the darkness. And then of course, Mao Zedong, communist ideology, which would slaughter so many, continues to do it. And people believe it's something very nice. I was hearing one of the Indian leaders speak about it. Oh, there is a disparity between rich and poor. Now, yes, it is there, and this has to be solved. Every such problem, Mother and Sri Aurobindo have considered from the deepest point of view. And what is their conclusion? Nothing would change if human nature remains the same. You may put any ideology in place, but who is going to apply? Man is going to apply. So what he'll say? Firstly, he will say, yes, yes, rich and poor must become equal. Yes. Who will make it equal? I'll make it equal. I believe in this ideology. And then he sits on chair, it's nothing but state control. Control of everything. And while there is some degree of apparent effort to uplift, there is also mass extermination of whatever does not conform to that kind of thinking. Freedom is snatched. So the price of equality is at the expense of freedom. Man is turned into a machine for roti kapda makan. No higher impulse is admitted. No religion. Nothing spiritual, because it's an anathema. So you see, it comes at a very heavy price. It's literally what is told in the Bible as selling your soul for a pot of porridge. Those who believe in communist ideology of this kind, they should know it's literally asking humanity to sell their soul. See any communist country and see whether there is any spiritual seeking. Is it even permissible? The other day I was having discussion about somebody who lived in Russia. He says, you couldn't, people who were reading Sri Aurobindo had to, literally do it clandestinely. Can you imagine Sri Aurobindo's Adventure of Consciousness, which was translated in Russia, always under threat that, oh, if somebody comes to know, we'll be put behind bars. The only thing that was allowed was Orthodox Christianity. And that too with a purpose. Look at China. Try to open a center in the name of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, or even Hare Krishna movement. See the resistance you are going to face. So if roti, kapda and makan is everything, then it's okay. And that also is not there. If you look at the village life, they're deprived. So all this facade he could see through behind all these ideological masks. So all that, even religious bigotries, and he could see all this. So he had to fight against formidable enemy, because the enemy was not just outside but even within. When he was putting his force on the side of the allies, when he was saying that, well, religions, fanaticism, fundamentalism, when he was speaking of all this, then even people in India, they didn't accept it. When Cripps' proposal had come, Sri Aurobindo sends him, as this 1942, Sri Aurobindo sends a telegram and an emissary asking the then Congress leaders to accept it. He said, it's grace which has come. Take the dominion status, you will get a unified India, and later, and the rest is just round the corner. He could see it, that British will leave India simply because the world situation has become such. And that was the reason they left, not because of Gandhiji. Because the world situation, it was unsustainable after the Second World War. So 42, the dominion status was coming because it helped them, but in the bargain it also helped India. And Sri Aurobindo's political acumen. So we have seen Sri Aurobindo as a poet, revolutionary philosopher, but also as a politician of the statesman of the highest order. And so Sri Aurobindo says, accept the Cripps proposal. And the then Congress rejected it, that it's a post-dated check, that yes, you will get autonomy, but after the war. Gandhiji went on to say that what does he know? He is sitting in Pondicherry, what does he know about the world affairs? They refused, and we are bleeding till today. The division took place and all this took place. So, but one thing happened, because 42, Sri Aurobindo had approved the Cripps proposal and put his, he had written also that, people should accept it. Perhaps, I think, moved by that, they wanted to give Sri Aurobindo Nobel Prize. Sri Aurobindo was nominated twice for the Nobel Prize, one in 1943 and once in 1951. Once for literature, second time for peace. And thank God, he didn't get it. Mother, I'm sure Sri Aurobindo himself must have done something that it doesn't come. Because Nobel Prize, we know, is the most ignoble thing which goes around. It's given just because it's a whole facade. It's one of those nets of falsehood. So the moment you get a Nobel Prize, I'm not talking of science, etc., but that's how the facade works. Some places it's right. But literature, peace, if you get Nobel Prize, means now there is something else. The pawn is made ready. And today we can see all this facade. So mother, of course, was happy that, thank God, they didn't put him in that list. So twice he was nominated for Nobel Prize. He's active. His contribution to Cripps' proposal was Stanford Cripps came and he appreciated that here is someone with this insight. Shobindu had foreseen Chinese aggression also. In 1949 he writes about once again revises the human cycle. This is a postscript chapter, the passing of war. And there he speaks about problems of India, one of them being invasion of Red China through Tibet. Did anyone listen? No. Bye bye, socialism. This is the state. And how much we suffered. And when help was sought from an American president, John Kennedy in 62, he said, why didn't you listen to somebody in India wrote about this 2 years back? And then they were shocked that they didn't know. And then he had to tell, no, Shobindu wrote it before 1950. He said, is it? How could he foresee it? We didn't listen. And I would say even today we are not listening to Shobindu. We are afraid or we are entrenched in our past formulas. We are not listening to Shobindu. And this is really a perilous situation. We don't understand Shobindu's value even today. So he gave all this, but like Jivan Mukt, Nishkam Karma, as Sri Krishna says, I am not doing all this for myself, but for the work I have come to do. So he did all this. Was he engaged in freedom movement of India? People would say no, he left in 1910. But if you ask Shobindu in 1932 says in one of the letters to Niruddha, Niruddha says, are you still working for India's freedom? He says, all that is already settled. I am working for what India is likely to do with the freedom. Bolshevism, Gunda Raj, things look ominous. Of course he was working. He was working from the occult standpoint. Because he had reached that state where like Krishna, he could be on the chariot and decide the future of the war. So Sri Aurobindo from his room was working out. And that's why the other day I was mentioning, and I must mention this today again, it would be very dangerous in Ayodhya to touch the relics land of Sri Aurobindo Sadhanale. I believe again this talk is going on. Because lack of occult insight, people are doing it. But it would be very dangerous. It should be left as it is. But anyways, human have their own way. Divine has his own way. So all this he foresaw. He was setting all this in the inner worlds correct. As he says in one of the letters, let you think that I should just pull the super mind, but I have to lay down the tracks. I have to ensure that the fuse doesn't go away when this super mind descends. So he was preparing the earth for the future at every level. Starting with his disciples in the ashram who themselves would not believe, who would doubt. So, and of course, those who apparently were seeking India's freedom, nobody has said in any document how India should run the future, except Sri Aurobindo. In 1914, in Foundations of Indian Culture, Renaissance of India, he speaks of the past and the future in countless letters. He has given the roadmap to the future. Everybody spoke of freedom. But if you see, what does it mean? Purna Swaraj, what you will do? Well, we'll pick up the constitution which is ready and apply. This is exactly what should not have been done. Anyways, so that's a story of how humanity always deals with the divine. And then, finally, because Sri Aurobindo saw all this resistance in the earth, in humanity, he did not blame. He said, let me absorb this poison within myself. So, he plunges deep into the inconscient, the abyss from where all this resistance comes. Absorbs it more and more. And as a result of it, on 5th December 1950, this is the Mahatyag Divas of Sri Aurobindo. So often people say, what should we call the word 5th December, because we can't call it Mahanirvan. He has already achieved it. You can't call it Mahasamadhi, Because samadhi in Sri Aurobindo's context means something very different. He had all these experiences. So what is that day? Someone would ask me. So I said, the day of the divine sacrifice. Divyatyag. That is what the day is about. And its far-reaching implications were that the mother took the work further because he absorbed all that poison. People ask for evidence. Evidence is very clear. If you see what happened in 1947 with the blood bath and everything, and if you see during the same time the flame and smoke from the Second World War, the world should have been having vertigo for decades. Because it means immense hatred, anger, fear, death, all this thrown into the atmosphere. What happened? In India, very soon you see that it started in its own limping way. But of course, he cautions the dangers in his 1947 address. And till date, we are not listening. Of course, we read these five dreams. I know people do it, give lectures, even ministers, they hear and give lecture. What are these five dreams? What does he say about in India? And that we can say, conclude as these were the works that Sri Aurobindo did. First dream was India's freedom. He was working for it. And therefore he says, on my birthday, India has got freedom. And I am happy that this has happened. But he says, India is divided. And this is very dangerous. It may permanently mar India's destiny. By whatever means, the division must go. And we can see today what's happening. Because on one side, Pakistan is beginning to crumble. That's the way it will go. Different parts and they will unite. And what happened in Bangladesh last 2 days, meddling from the so-called powers, Western powers, and even probably China, but whatever it is. But this, which seems right now a kind of state of anarchy, and anarchy it is, all kinds of declaration, will lead to a further splitting. And all these different parts will reunite with India. This is a necessity of nature. It cannot remain. It will just not be allowed by nature. Powers, nations, they will come into the picture. In trying to create a greater Bangladesh, you will see a union slowly getting established. But the process is, of course, dangerous because we don't listen. So this is what we see. It's a very terrible state through which people are going. Sri Aurobindo spoke of a catastrophe which may intervene. Maybe this also the catastrophic passage. And he says that he has foreseen all this. And he says if the partition doesn't go, destiny of India and destiny of the world is at peril. And then of course he says in the end that the partition must and will go. So let's stay with that. Second, he speaks about rise of Asia. He was working towards it. Because the cycle of time is now shifting. Rise of Asia also means the decline of Europe. And he speaks about it in some of his aphorisms. Why decline of Europe? What's wrong that Europe has done? Well, wrong, the list is too big. But because that whole civilization is based on a scientific, materialistic view of life. And therefore it has to collapse. It cannot become the spearhead of the future. It has done its job, had its place, but now, unless it evolves and transforms into something greater, it is bound to collapse. We can see, we can witness that also. It has begun, and whose seeds have been sown by people there, through whatever there, we are not going into that. But Asia is rising. Asia is destined to rise. And whatever be the problems that are going on between the rivalries, etc., because falsehood will try its best, ultimately Asia is going to rise. The third dream which he speaks about is India's gift to the world, spiritual gift. That we see happening. So he was awakening within India the spirit of Sanatana Dharma. So nowadays we talk about Sanatana Dharma because he says India lives if Sanatana Dharma lives. India declines if Sanatana Dharma declines. And if Sanatana Dharma could perish, if, then India will perish. And with India, the world. So India's gift to the world is the gift not of IT and all that is fine. Shubhendu said all that is okay. India's development only in terms of the political, economic development as a military power, all that is okay. But India must never forget that its soul is the soul of Sanatana Dharma. And in Sanatana Dharma is our own survival and the survival of the world. So now we see that that movement has also started. There are many hiccups, many problems. Well, that's how evolution proceeds. We should not worry about it. So this was the third dream. The fourth is unification of mankind. Here also we see certain movements have started. He sowed the seeds. He has given the roadmap. He has spoken about the spiritual evolution through which mankind will be united. And he has used the word spiritualized, spiritual religion of humanity. Not just religion of humanity. But humanity will discover its origin in the sense of the one. For that we need to evolve spiritually. All over the world we see movements have started. Actually, from the hardcore entrenchment of religion when Swami Vivekananda had gone to today, look at the change. From being mocked as a monk to today the welcome monk, that whole thing has changed. It's still a long way, but it has begun. Spiritual. Now people talk about spirituality, they talk about spirituality and religion. Many spiritual movements, meditation practices, all that is happening all over the world. So, spiritual evolution which will unify mankind. The last thing which we was mainly working upon was the supramental manifestation, which means a new race transcending the human and a divine superhumanity of the future. And that part, he was in his birthday, Independence Day message, he says, that is still a hope and a dream of the future. He doesn't say that this is granted. But he says, but I do trust that just as the divine has fulfilled all other, this too will eventually be fulfilled. But he says, here the resistances and the difficulties are far greater. Probably we have not yet started reckoning with these. Or maybe because of the supramental manifestation, the pressure, this is what is happening that we see happening. So 5th December, Shubhendu took the plunge as the divine sacrifice to prepare matter and remove many of those obstacles within the human consciousness at some fundamental level. And that's why we see on 5th December 1950 also, the supermind descended, took hold of his body. It was descending, but it was not expressing in this way, manifesting in this way. And that descent lasted for 111 hours. And his body was aglow with a pinkish golden light, which many people saw with naked eyes. And the heartbeat had stopped, the breath has stopped, the body remained without showing signs of deterioration. So French doctors were coming, examining, because otherwise you can't keep the body like that. And then after 4 days, when the first signs started, then the mother said he is now actively withdrawing, and he was interred in the Samadhi on 9th December 1950. And the mother wrote that message of gratitude. Did the story get over? No. 1971, when mother was asked, what is Shubhendu doing nowadays? Because she was constantly in touch. There were many others who were having those revelations, beautiful experiences of Shubhendu and the mother. So she was asked, she said, oh, his action has become very, very wide and powerful. Because in a human body, it was a limited action. But now, because he is freed from the human body and in the supramental body, mother and Shubhendu, we were reading yesterday actually from Collected Works, Volume 9, his action has become much more powerful and much more prominent. And that's a whole chapter, Shubhendu after 1950, but we need not go into that. But she says, his action has become very powerful. It is like a golden force pressing upon matter. It's pressing and pressing like a golden force, compelling matter. And when you know what happens when you compel, on one side, there are those who open suddenly. On the other side, the resistance also becomes very acute. So this is the process which is going on. Sri Aurobindo Leela has just begun. And obviously, as Mother says, falsehood doesn't die too soon. There are many other side stories intertwined in it, like the fate of the Asuras, which we'll deal separately maybe when we talk about a review of Mother's life. But suffice it to say that this age, coming age, is the age of Sri Aurobindo. And it's not about converting anybody to any belief, recognizing, forcing anyone to believe, not at all. But it's about the truth that we see happening and many things in the world which are beginning to come are going to only lead us closer and closer to this great event faster and faster in paradoxical ways. And I could go on all the, you know, in Ramayana, I'll just finish with these two events. Nagpash. Ravan felt that now I have got it. But what happened next? Shakti to Lakshman. I have got it now. What happened next? Ahi Ravan, Mahi Ravan. Now it definitely they are going to die. What happened next? So this is how we will see that there would be states, periods, when suddenly we'll feel, oh, the entire thing has gone down. But it'll emerge far greater and far more victorious. Because the new consciousness, the truth consciousness, and nothing can stop its action and its eventual victory. From our side, we just need to have the faith and it will be fulfilled. Let me close with these words of the mother on 9th December, which are inscribed on the Samadhi. As I said, this is only a very brief review. There is no end to this story. It's an ever unfolding story. Actually, if you have the vision, you will see it as the story which is unfolding to all the surface drama. December 9, 1950. To thee who hast been the material envelope of a master, to thee our infinite gratitude. Before thee who has done so much for us, who has worked, struggled, suffered, hoped, endured so much. Before thee who has willed all, attempted all, prepared, achieved all for us. Before thee we bow down and implore that we may never forget, even for a moment, all we owe to thee. As Sri Aurobindo withdrew, he had already placed the mother in the front. And just as when Sri Krishna withdrew, Kaliyuga had started and he gave in the hands of man the Gita. What was the purpose of Gita? To navigate through the journey of Kaliyuga. So that the yoga is kept alive. And many great kings kept the yoga alive. Till finally the eclipse came and Mayavad came. Until then, India resisted all the invasions. Now from this Kaliyuga to the new Satyuga, Sri Aurobindo has given to us the gift of Savitri. Savitri is the Veda of the future. Savitri is the scripture of the future. It is the book of the future. And this is the greatest gift of all these things that Sri Aurobindo has done and many more which he has done without our knowledge. But this, what we have recounted, are just a few things. But he has given to us the greatest of all gifts, and that is the gift of Savitri. He has placed it in our hands. He has made the roadmap of the future. He has ensured that the supramental creation, the new manifestation, the new Satyog, if you want to use the language, is destined to be is as sure as the rising of tomorrow's sun. He did predict once. He said, the sun of India's destiny is bound to rise, and it shall rise and overflow India and overflow Asia and overflow the world. So he has secured the future of the world. But for us, because we don't know, we look at only surface appearances. Our life is like a blind man's buff. So we don't know. So for us, has he given something? How do we navigate through all this? Thus shall the mass transcendent. So he gave us in our hand Savitri, which is the supreme assurance and the great promise. Thus shall the mass transcendent mount his throne. When darkness deepens, strangling the earth's breast, and man's corporeal mind is the only lamp. As a thief's in the night shall be the covert tread. He has foreseen the dense darkness. Thus shall the mass transcendent mount his throne. When darkness deepens, strangling the earth's breast, and man's corporeal mind is the only lamp. As a thief's in the night shall be the covert tread. A voice ill heard shall speak. The soul obey. A power into mind's inner chamber steal. A charm and sweetness open life's closed door. See, a voice ill heard shall speak. People won't believe. And yet the souls will wake up, those who are destined, who are being prepared, who have been prepared, who are made ready. And beauty conquer the resisting world. The truth light capture nature by surprise. A stealth of God compel the heart to bliss. And earth grow unexpectedly divine. The darkness is dense when the sun is just about to come out. You see, when you see the first glimmer, it's amazing. That streak of orange-red amid the night. It's such a... So it will be like that. In matter shall be lit the spirit's glow. Even the body will begin to feel. In body and body kindle the sacred birth. That those who are made ready and they will turn with aspiration and the call. It's not a yoga where we convert anyone. In body and body kindle the sacred birth. Night shall awake to the anthem of the stars. The days become a happy pilgrim march. Our will a force of the eternal's power. And thought the rays of a spiritual sun. Savitri is the document of the future. Entire future. What's going to come? Those who are full of anguish. Who want to know what's going to happen. What's going to happen. And if you want to read only one book. Of course Mother has described all this in great detail. Yesterday in Collected Works of the Mother, Volume 9 we were reading. But if you want to read one book. Read Savitri. And you read only Canto. Or book 11, which has only one canto, and there also read only the last 20 odd pages. The book itself is 724 pages. Read from page 700 onwards. And all the future is there. But Shubhendu knows, nobody will believe. He says, okay. It is yoga, it's beyond belief and non-belief. It's not about whether people will believe or not believe. It's not relevant anymore. It is not left in the hands of man. Mother says that categorically. It is destined to be even if man refuses. That too is there toward the end. Even if a hostile force clings to its reign. Still this is going to be. Of course, we will have the joy of participating if we take it that yes, let us collaborate for the future. Otherwise we'll just be witnesses and there's no great fun to suddenly see things happening and where you don't know where you are and you are lost in the turbulence. Last four lines. A few shall see what none yet understands. God shall grow up while the wise men talk and sleep. For man shall not know the coming till its hour. And belief shall be not till the work is done. For man shall not know the coming till its hour. And belief shall be not till the work is done. Om Namo Bhagavate Sri Aurobindaya. Om Anandamayi Chaitanyamayi Satyamayi Parami. Home, Mother Shri Aurobindo is my refuge.